Chapter 1. Remembering. The Pali term sati is usually translated into English as mindfulness, which in Western Buddhist circles has come to be associated with a keen attention to one's present experience. This is not wrong. Awareness of the present moment is certainly crucial to self-transformation. But mindfulness is not just a spotlight focused on the present. True, learning to develop the kinds of concentration that is so intense that you are conscious of nothing outside your present experience is important to spiritual growth. But to attain transcendental insight, you need to appreciate the true nature of such intense experiences. While staying receptive to and being enlivened by the whole range of your present experience, you also try to wake up to the true significance of that experience, which involves awareness both of the past and of the future. This is brought out by the literal translation of sati, in other words, recollection, memory, recalling to mind. Just as important as the impressions we receive through our senses, including the mind, are the ways we understand those sensations, the knowledge and previous experience that impinge upon the present, colouring it and allowing meaning to arise. Memory is what enables us to recollect ourselves in the present moment, and without it we cannot experience anything fully, however strongly focused we are on the present situation. One of Charles Dickens' Christmas books, called The Haunted Man, illustrates this very well. It concerns a learned professor of chemistry whose past contains a particularly painful episode, the memory of which weighs continually on his mind, dragging him down into a deep depression. It is Christmas, and as the frost and snow close in upon his lonely room, the scientist's memories somehow coalesce into a ghostly doppelganger, a mirror image of himself. Announcing that it had come to make a bargain with him, this figure offers him the power to banish all his recollections, and with them the intertwined chain of feelings and associations that depend upon them. After some deliberation, the scientist accepts the offer, which brings with it not only the ability to forget his own past, but also the power to remove, at a touch of his hand, all trace of memory from anyone he approaches. Thinking this a real benefit to humanity, he begins to go about the city, touching various people he knows. Just as the phantom promised, their memories begin to disappear. The significance of the phantom's bargain is, of course, its moral effect. For each of the people affected, the consequences of losing their memory turn out to be entirely negative. As the recollection of their past life slips away, they start to disintegrate as moral beings, becoming by degrees more and more mean and selfish. So much of what is good in them is bound up with their past, that once memory begins to fade, their selflessness and compassion is supplanted by a calculating indifference. Take the Tetterbys, for example, a poor and hard-working couple who are just managing to scrape by and feed their 7 children. They are kept going by their strong sense of interdependence and mutual affection. But once the scientist has brushed past them, their sense of themselves starts to disappear, together with their memories of their shared struggles and their concern for each other and their children. Gone are their memories of their youthful times together, their courtship and marriage. Now they are only aware of what they can see in the present. Mrs. Tetterby can see only a shabby, bald old man, with no noble or attractive features to redeem his worn-out appearance, while her husband sees only a fat and unprepossessing woman who is well past her prime. Any sense of what they once meant to each other dissolves into a mean-spirited grasping after petty gains and immediate enjoyments. As the scientist begins to learn, without the capacity to recollect the past, there can be no real friendship, no real love. Things lose their meaning, and our humanity ebbs away. The moral of the story is that the function of memory is inseparably connected with the ability to act ethically towards one's fellow human beings. Our moral responsiveness to the world around us, which is central to our spiritual development, functions by accessing memory through the application of mindfulness, but also through the emotional connections that memory delivers. Retrieving memories is not a mechanical process like rewinding a tape recorder. Our recollections come back to us in the form of emotions, which grow stronger as scenes and events re-emerge in our minds. Once those emotions are rekindled, be they pleasant or painful, they illuminate all the small details of the situation that would otherwise have been lost to us. The greater the importance to you of an event, the more vivid will be your emotional associations with it, and generally, the more fully you will be able to recall it. We remember our first deep friendships, the first time we fell in love, the first books or music that made a deep impression upon us, and we have powerful and meaningful memories of events which others who were present at the time might have entirely forgotten, because to them they were insignificant. When elderly people recall events from the distant past very clearly, although they can't remember what happened just last week, this is not necessarily due to the diminishing mental powers of old age. It might simply be that, set against the pattern of one's whole life, certain impressions and experiences stand out more distinctly because of their formative influence. Sometimes, of course, we do forget events that have strong emotional associations, but this bears out the idea that memory and emotions are inextricably linked. We might forget some experiences because we are repressing our difficult feelings about them. It is entirely natural to wish we could forget the sorrow, the wrong, and the trouble we have known. But if we did, how could we learn from life and move on? All our experience, pleasant and unpleasant, is part of who we are now. We need to find ways of recontacting our past if we are to become fully formed individuals. Dickens himself was able to use his great powers of imagination to unlock his memories. He once tried to write his autobiography, but quickly became aware that he had lost access to some periods in his early childhood, because the memories associated with them were so painful. His solution was to write David Copperfield, an autobiographical novel into which he incorporated many of those early experiences. By writing about himself in the character of David Copperfield and his father in the character of Mr. Micawber, he brought up those hidden memories in a way that enabled him to be objective about them, and thus at last to liberate himself from them. Retrieving repressed memories is, of course, the stuff of much contemporary therapy, but we should consider the purpose of retrieving them. It is a question of our vision of human existence, and here Buddhism goes further than most psychotherapeutic models, although some do have a spiritual dimension. As we recollect ourselves, as we retrieve and integrate what has been scattered, we do so with a sense of where we are going, a sense of a future goal. This also, then, must be included in our definition of mindfulness, and it is the subject of our next chapter.